As AI continues to revolutionize our world, there's a critical conversation we can't ignore: AI safety and security. And that's where HackerOne's AI red teaming comes into play, rigorously testing AI models to prevent them from being misled or exploited. HackerOne employs over 2 million ethical hackers, and 750 of them specialize in prompt hacking and other AI security and testing. So HackerOne isn't just theorizing, they're actively safeguarding AI's future. Just recently, a team unearthed over 100 vulnerabilities in just 2 weeks. So whether you're at the helm of a startup or steering product innovation at a large company, it's time to prioritize AI security. Visit HackerOne.com/AI for more. Again, HackerOne.com/AI.
This episode is sponsored by porkbun.com. Porkbun is a refreshingly different domain name registrar that's different from the other ones like GoDaddy or Namecheap. They've got low prices on hundreds of different domain extensions. They've got everything from .com domains to really cool ones like .pro, .dev, .xyz. Every domain name at Porkbun comes with tons of freebies too, like SSL certificate, whois privacy, DNS, URL forwarding, and hosting trials. Because why pay for things that should be free, right? All these incredible features and tools are backed by incredible support, 365 days a year, and more 5-star reviews on Trustpilot from real customers than anyone else. Look, you can get $1 off your next domain name from Porkbun and see why they're the best domain name registrar around by using our code. Just go to porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. That's porkbun, porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. You'll save $1 on your next domain. This episode is brought to you by Gigantic. At Gigantic, you can level up your product skills through live, small group, cohort-based trainings. We're incredibly excited to welcome you to our next cohort of our product strategy training, kicking off in January of 2024. This course will take you through the frameworks that product leaders use at companies like eBay, DoorDash, Groupon, Rent the Runway, in order to scale their teams. It's taught by Ben Foster, a friend of this podcast, who is the former chief product officer at Whoop. So come join us. Go to gigantic.is. That's gigantic.is. And save your seat for our January cohort. Your potential is gigantic, and we're here to help you reach it. Go to gigantic.is to reserve your seat today.
Welcome to the Rocket Ship Podcast. I'm Michael Sacca.
I'm Joelle Steiniger.
And I'm Matt Goldman.
And we're having 20-minute talks with entrepreneurs teaching you how to launch your product into revenue.
Check out our book at howtobuildarocketship.com to reserve your launch discount and to download a free chapter.
This week we talked with Todd Garland, the founder of Buy Sell Ads, about how you don't need to be the first to market. We also chatted a bit about how old-fashioned hustle and personal touch still literally pays off. I think you guys are seriously going to like this one.
Welcome to the Rocket Ship Podcast. We're here with Todd Garland, the founder of Buy Sell Ads, which is my favorite ad network on the planet. So, Todd, we've been kind of discussing the early days of Buy Sell Ads and how you got it off the ground. Why don't you take us back to what made you start getting into the ad business?
Sure thing. So so for some context, Buy Sell Ads primarily started in like the web design and development space, and helping those types of publishers sell ads to advertisers. And what it really came down to is I myself was passionate about web design and development. I had a couple hobby blogs that I was using to make some money on the side. And ultimately, I discovered that I was much better at helping folks like myself monetize their sites than I was actually in writing about web design and development and writing tutorials and stuff. And so that's largely why I launched Buy Sell Ads, is because I found a better way to to get advertiser money and, you know, Robinhood it over to the publishers.
So what did the ad space look like in 2009? Who was your main competitor?
Yeah, so the really the only other company dabbling in, like, I guess what I consider the sponsorship side of online advertising was AdBright. And I think just because of their evolution and where they were, they'd been around for, I don't know, maybe 3, 4, or 5 years at that point in 2008. They were at the point where they'd already built copious numbers of features into their product. But ultimately what people wanted was just something much simpler than that. And so that was kind of the core difference between BuySell Ads and AdBright, is that we literally only sold ads at fixed 30-day rates. That was the only way you could sell.
I think there's something really interesting there too, because a lot of people in this space, when you're trying to get into the SaaS world, you're thinking of a new market you can break into, or trying to come up with some completely novel idea. And what I found really interesting about BuySell Ads is that you kind of proved something which I think is true, and that you don't need a completely new market. You just need to solve a problem better for an existing market. And to know that, I mean, I don't know what your thought process was like at the time when you decided to go up against AdBright, but it sounds like you had a completely different idea of how things should be done. I don't know if you kind of just made the decision lightly to give it a shot, or if you knew you were taking on, you know, a David and Goliath situation. But I think there's something really interesting there.
Yeah, I mean, I have to be honest, I was pretty naive going into it. And had I known that it was David and Goliath, I probably wouldn't have done it. But I think that's the beauty of being naive about something and being able to take a fresh perspective on an industry that has a ton of history and a lot of baggage, is just being able to go into it with a fresh set of eyes and trying to figure out how you can break down a problem at the most basic level to help people do something a little bit differently and help them, you know, solve the problem.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so what did that the first launch look like? You're going up against AdBright, and what was that page that you launched with?
Yeah, so I guess the story I always like to tell is that I launched with, like, folks call it minimum viable product. This was like minimum viable, archaic version of the worst coded HTML page ever.
Sounds good.
So quite literally, people would submit their website for approval, and I'd get that email saying it had been submitted. I'd go to their website, I'd take a screenshot manually, I'd bring that into Photoshop, I'd resize it, upload that screenshot to the server, and then update the database with, like, the file name so that it would look like their profile was created for them. And in the meantime, there was, like, a default screenshot that said, you know, processing. So they just didn't know that it was me, you know, in Photoshop actually processing the screenshot. But that's just an example of, like, you know, those things that, like, aren't directly related to solving the actual problem. Like, people weren't using BuySell Ads because they wanted to have an automatic screenshot generated of their website. They're using BuySell Ads because they wanted an easier way to sell ads to advertisers.
Right.
And so things like that aren't critical to the process can easily be, you know, offloaded into manual things. You know?
So what else in that first version was either left out or mocked like that?
Cash outs. What a cash out is once a publisher actually makes money through BuySell Ads, they can then withdraw that money. So you had to actually send me an email. There was a link in the publisher dashboard that said, you know, cash out your money, and it would just pop up an email to support at buysellads.com. Advertisers also couldn't actually cancel their ads without sending me an email, which probably sounds crazy, but, you know, as it turns out, doing things that way forced them and me to get to know each other. And so it allowed me to, instead of, you know, trying to figure out how to build personality into the software, I was able to just, you know, be personality over email, which then further kind of roped people into enjoying doing business with BuySell Ads. Hopefully, right? I mean, that was the goal. The goal was to, the goal wasn't to have to do these things manually. The goal was to get the site live. And a nice byproduct of skipping some of those things that should have been automated was that it allowed me to build a rapport with all of our customers.
I think that's awesome. One of the things that when you're building a product, you see all these other products around you that have amazing experiences, and you compare yourself to that. So features like the automatic screenshot generator or cash outs, you picture people just hating you if you leave something out like that. But when we do leave something out and force ourselves to push out a version of Hookfeed, we realize that people don't get angry. And it's like you said, a lot of times it's just a chance to talk to them, and they don't blame you. They understand that it's a small team, and it's almost an opportunity to show them how fast you can respond and help them out.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, what people care about is that you're solving some sort of problem for them. Anything else is just bonus, you know? So.
When Rainn Wilson realized he had a special gift for talking people to sleep, he had two choices: construct a massive speaker that would blast his voice to every person in the country, or invent a talking pillow. AT&T Business eventually talked him into the pillow thing. And, backed by a reliable network, the only network with built-in security controls, Sleep with Rainn was a hit. Take your ideas to the moon and beyond at business.att.com. That's business.att.com. This episode is brought to you by Yahoo Finance. Wouldn't it be great if you could see all of your investment and retirement accounts in one place? With Yahoo Finance, you can consolidate your views with multiple accounts into one hub and access the expert analysis you need to tend to your entire portfolio with confidence. Honestly, this has been a lifesaver for me. I've used Yahoo Finance to consolidate all of my various 401k and investment accounts so I can see everything all in one place. And it makes it incredibly easy to manage. So if you're struggling with that, check out Yahoo Finance. For over 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. You can securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including your 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart a great investor, and that's how Yahoo Finance ensures that you have the insights to look at your wealth in its entirety. So go to yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination.
So you launched this kind of stripped back product. How were you driving people to it? I mean, how were you really getting your first customers?
The term has definitely become cliche, but really I was just hustling. You know, I was looking for people online that who I felt had a problem that I could actually solve. And so ultimately what it meant is that I just really understood the product that we were trying to build, and I really understood the problem that we were solving. And so I was able to articulate that pretty effectively to folks who I had identified as having that same problem. I wasn't automating any of that kind of early hustle or anything like that. We still don't to this day. There's something nice about a well targeted cold email. Cold calls and cold emails, everybody hates to get them, but when you receive that one that's like, wow, I think you can actually help me, you reply, you know. So I think as long as you stay human in the way that you approach people and you don't nag them, you know, like I have people who will try and pitch me on services, and I'll get like 3-4 emails before I finally get angry and send them back an email and say, hey, can you just remove me from your list? I'm not interested. So I think it just takes a certain amount of tact and, a certain human quality, I guess, to knowing how to communicate effectively via email.
Yeah, actually, I loved your example cold email that you have in your speaker deck from Valeo, because we have I forget who coined the term. It might've been an Amy Hoy term, the IREA, where you send someone an email and it's everything about me and verbal IREA basically. And your email is really right off the bat all about them, what you're going to solve for them. You notice that they have a problem and you want to make it easier, and it's short. It's really kind of the perfect cold email. So We'll pull that out in the notes so that anyone listening can take a look and see, because it's really a great example.
Cool. Thanks. I think it's also important to note that the invite code in that email is just like a random, you know, me hitting the keyboard, you know, 10 times.
to make it look like it was a private beta.
Yeah. So the only thing that actually like prevented you from registering at Bicel Ads was the absence of some sort of invite code. So you could type, you know, ? Invite equals whatever under the URL and then register.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's just another example of like, don't build features that you really don't need. You know?
Yeah,
yeah.
Because simple little things like that can balloon. I mean, there's a lot of code these days that you can use to simplify and make things easier to build in. But that can easily take up a half day or a day that could either be spent on something else or could push up your launch sooner.
Totally.
Kind of speaking of time, you weren't working full time on buy sell ads in the very beginning. I'd love to hear a bit about what you were doing in addition to buy sell ads to pay the bills during that time.
Sure. So I was working a full time job at a company called HubSpot here in Boston, and even before that, I was freelancing while I'd started building buy sell ads. So, you know, whether it was freelance work or an actual full-time job, it was still kind of the same general concept of having some sort of consulting work that pays the bills on the side while you're trying to build a product that, you know, sustains itself.
Yeah, and one of the interesting things that we kind of talked about before jumping on was the stigma around freelancing, which I think led you into HubSpot.
There's kind of this expectation that if you are launching a SaaS product, it's almost a failure if you're still taking this consulting work. And that's just not the case. I mean, it's a slow road to get things going. So, we'd love to hear kind of the timeline of how long you worked at HubSpot doing the juggle, when you were finally able to make the leap over full time.
Yeah, sure. So, at the end, I was working at HubSpot for 2 years, I think half that time was as a contractor. So while I was doing my other freelance work as well, and while I was working on the initial version of Bicel Ads, I didn't actually launch Bicel Ads when I had it finished. It kind of sat on the shelf. I think it was either like 3 or 6 months that it could just sat there before I actually launched. And like I said, I was working at HubSpot, and the reason why I took the job at HubSpot is because I felt as though I needed to prove myself that I could actually hold a real job. I think there's this this back then anyway, there's this weird stigma toward people who freelance that it like wasn't a real job, or, you know, when you had to tell your relatives that you were a webmaster because that's the only term that they could understand. So for me, you know, part of accepting the job at HubSpot was circumstantial. I was getting married that year, and I felt as though I needed to prove to my fiance and you know, and family that I could have a real job and I was worthy of being married to. as odd as it may sound, you know, that's one thing that definitely weighed on me in leading up to taking that job at HubSpot. Anyway, fast forward. So I launched Bicel Ads February 2008, and then I left HubSpot at the end of 2008. So January 1st, 2009, I was 100% on my own. So there's about an 11-month ramp up period before I could actually go out on it full time.
Nice. And then when did you hire your first employee?
So first full time employee was June of 2009.
Okay.
And I think part of the one of the more interesting parts about the Bicel Ads story is that it was June and not something like April, because our first hire had to first graduate high school.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
And he now holds a pretty important position.
He's the co-founder of Bicel Ads now. So
that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Did you know him beforehand?
Well, I mean, we had started just before the end of 2008. We had started working on the new version. So he was working as a contractor, and he just didn't come on full time until June, once he had finished high school.
Yeah. So he had the trial period, you know, he was going to work out.
Yeah, exactly. We rewrote the entire BuySellAds code because I'm a you know, not even a designer, like a diviner, a front end kind of coder type person, and most certainly not a developer. And we rewrote the entire code base between January 1st and April 15th.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a pretty crazy stretch.
That's awesome. So I'd love to talk a bit about what you guys are rolling out today, because you guys have gone through the startup period. You have, I think, 19 employees now, but you're rolling out a new product, which is the Publisher Pro. And this is something that we actually use. But we wanted to talk a bit about the landing page and how you guys decided to put the design together. There aren't a lot of screenshots of the application. You've really, you walk the user through what the benefits are, and we'd love to hear how you guys came about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's actually, you're right. There's zero screenshots of the actual app. We're just trying to help, paint a picture of, what we expect or what we assume a user wants to aspire towards. And a lot of it stems around just the ever-changing landscape, if you will, of display advertising and advertising on the web in general, because a lot's changing. You know, like, you know, the same display ads we were selling back in 2008, they just aren't as effective for advertisers here in 2014. So things are changing. Publishers are being forced to kind of change how they monetize, and there's a lot going on. And so in terms of the landing page, basically – all we're trying to do is help a publisher see that there is something else out there that can help you monetize, and then get them to get in touch with us. There's no pricing. There's just a lead form. No, we don't collect a credit card or anything like that just yet.
Are you targeting kind of a new, I want to say niche, I don't know if that's the right word, market of people who now want to interact with ads via an API? Or are you kind of... are your current customers transitioning over to this new way of serving ads?
So, you know, ad software and ad tech is largely like clunky, and you know, even ad software built 5 years ago is kind of stale in a way. And so what we're trying to do is just bring a breath of fresh air into ad serving at its core, which is, to your question, you know, folks looking to serve ads through an API and stuff like that. And then on top of that, just help them, or give them better tools that allow them to be more efficient, because the reality is that, like, publishers these days, they don't have, like, you know, sales teams of four or five people who can actually go out and sell ads. It's much more centered around, like, the indie developer, who just has to do more with less. And so that's what the tool speaks to.
Yeah. And it is, really easy to integrate. So what's been kind of the most interesting use case you've seen on the, around this API?
That's actually that's a good question. So, I think the most interesting use case is actually a product we built on top of it.
Okay.
And we built like a pay-per-click native ad thing, I guess I'll call it, on top of it. That's at promoted.com.
Okay.
But I mean, I think in general, like, you know, and I don't, you know, I don't necessarily want to talk about like why my new product is so great and all that kind of stuff. I think in general, it's an example of how, you know, businesses like continuously have to reinvent themselves. Yep, I mean, if you look back 2008, 6 years ago, when we first launched BuySellAds, like now Publisher Pro is effectively, it's our startup within a startup, you know, mm-hmm. It's us trying to reinvent ourselves as well. I think that's the interesting part about Publisher Pro, is that like we're at this interesting time in BuySellAds history, 6 years in, where, you know, now we're trying to recreate some new secret sauce, so to speak, you know.
So are you familiar with Adi's new product?
Yes.
So he's talked a lot about how he built up Woo Themes and had all this experience, and then he launched public beta, and it looked like it did pretty well before he pressed pause. But he said that there were a whole like new set of challenges that he had to face, and it wasn't as easy as he thought it would be. In launching this startup within a startup, have you guys found anything that you thought would be easy, or has it been a lot easier than the first run, having this audience of customers that you could reach out to that are more receptive to you?
Yeah, you know, I think no matter what, it's always going to be hard for any company or even new company to launch a new thing. And I think that's an important thing for folks starting out for the first time and maybe launching their first company to understand, is that while you may think you're up against Goliath because they already have a customer base, and they already have tech, and they have a team, they have money and all those things, like, you know, it really is much more of a level playing field than you might think. In general, it's hard to launch new things that are actually innovative and that people actually want to use. Even for us to launch this new product, Publisher Pro, you know, there is nothing stopping, you know, Joe Schmo or Sally Schmo, whoever may be, who's building the next, you know, ad server. There's nothing to stop them from actually competing with us on a level playing field.
We were actually just talking about that right before the call, how people avoid markets where they already see someone doing it. Maybe they're doing it really well. Maybe it just appears like they are, but you avoid it nonetheless because you think they've kind of cornered it off. But there's always room, and there's always a bunch of different ways to solve the same problem. So
totally.
Yeah, you're definitely speaking to that.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, even look at folks like Stripe, right? I mean, like, Stripe has theoretically come along and disrupted payments in some way because they made it so incredibly easy to get up and running, as opposed to the archaic folks like Authorize.net and, you know, WorldPay or whomever. But there's still, like, people coming up and competing with Stripe. You know, there's Balance Payments, there's Braintree Payments, who is maybe even older than Stripe. I don't know. But anyway, my point is that, like, you know, even new folks are seeing constant, challenges to what they've built. So,
My favorite actual real world example of this right now is Lyft and Uber.
Yeah, totally.
On the taxis.
Yeah.
Yep. That's definitely a great example.
Well, thanks, Todd, for joining us, and for anyone out there who has not seen Buy Sell Ads, go to buysellads.com and check out the Publisher Pro. My face is even on the landing page. So.
Yeah, Todd, have you tested that? Have you gotten a different model?
We have something in there. So, Michael, when you log in, we track your IP address. So it's just you seeing.
Oh,
dang it.
I'm just kidding. It's actually the only one there right now. We have some other examples we need to add. But
Nice. So check out Publisher Pro. We use it on Benchwarmer and Instatabs. It's fantastic. It solved our problem. So check that out. And Todd, thank you so much for joining us and kind of sharing your insight here into the SaaS world.
Yeah, thanks so much, Todd.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you guys, and thanks everybody for listening.
Yeah. They probably call him Steve Jobs because he got him. He could give a job to anybody, man, no problem. Computers downtown and computers up in Harlem. They running out of computers because everybody bought them. Caught him up in the web of the world, and it's wide. The YouTube's has more science than Bill Nye, the science guy. I'm wild, and why? Because the internet filled with spies from the NSA. That's crazy. The internet filled with government wise guys that's maybe trying to give you the disease, the rabies. Yeah, we self-curate social media. What happened to when you had to kick it with Tina to know if she was feeling ya? Free yourself from my control, he's just freeing ya. If you're feeling me, I'm feeding y'all. The real knowledge of the mind.